You are totally not alone. There are so many women that are going through this every single day. And consulting people like women's health physiotherapists, like I did with Michelle, is such a key step. And my experience has been extremely positive.
Hello, I'm Michelle Murphy, physiotherapist specialising in women's health and wellness. You are listening to Choose to Thrive, the podcast series connecting women through the power of shared experience. Remember, no matter what's going on in your life, you are not alone. So thanks for joining the conversation. And since you're here, let's dance. Michelle here. Thanks for joining me. So I have a question for you ladies. Have you ever experienced sex that was uncomfortable or even outright painful? I would suggest that most, if not all women, have at some point in their lives had a sexual experience that was less than blissfully wonderful. Am I right? And we could dive into a mega can of worms here that could lead us to issues relating to society's expectations about women's roles, the impact of pornography, a general lack of accurate information about sex and desire and libido and arousal, about consent, both explicit and implied, about understanding our boundaries and having courage to stand firm for them, about believing we are worthy enough to express our boundaries and that if someone doesn't respect that, then we need to consider whether they deserve to be in our lives, let alone inside our bodies, right? So here's the thing. Our body will manifest what we cannot say or admit to ourselves in our head, truth. So I'll say that again. Our bodies will physically manifest our deeper truth that we may fail to recognize at the level of our thoughts. This might look like physical tension that we hold in our bodies or sensations that we feel in our bodies, like a sense of constriction in our throat or chest or nausea or a squirminess in our gut or tension in our pelvic floor. One of the greatest skills we can cultivate is the ability to tune into what our body is telling us, really feeling what our physical body is telling us. Call it your gut or your intuition, there is truth there. One of the most intense physical manifestations of what I'm describing is known as vaginismus, which is defined as muscle tension and spasm in the pelvic floor muscles, making it difficult, painful, or even impossible to achieve penetration, whether during sexual intercourse or a pap smear or using a tampon. Dyspareunia is the term used to define painful sex. To be honest, these are medicalized labels for a highly complex issue that is more about disembodiment or disconnection from self in most cases. It's certainly not necessarily a disease process involved. The important thing to know is it is common and experienced by many, and this points to deeper issues at a societal level, in my opinion. These conditions can be highly distressing for women. I see women who think they are broken and damaged, that their identity as a woman is compromised, and it breaks my heart, to be honest, because far from being broken, their bodies are doing an exemplary job of protecting them. To allow someone or something to actually be inside our bodies is the most vulnerable thing we can ever do. Period. It's no small thing. It's actually massive. We take it for granted. Where the issue lies is the disconnect between head and heart, between head and the physical temple, our bodies, which hold so much more wisdom than our head gives credit to. So we need to shine a light on some of the issues surrounding pain as it's related to sex. I'd love to see a world where these two words never have to go together. It's also important to know that these issues can be healed through the cultivation of self-awareness and, most importantly, self-love and authenticity. And there's no shame in seeking professional support. In fact, I'd strongly recommend it. Which brings me to this podcast episode with the amazing Emily. This young woman is just 20 years old and yet has such phenomenal self-awareness and emotional intelligence. She's still learning and growing and developing like all of us. And yet she has faced a really difficult challenge in her life with grace and authenticity. It has been such a pleasure working with her this year and seeing her evolve and change from a place of self-doubt and uncertainty to a woman with powerful self-belief who deeply understands and appreciates her boundaries and has actively and lovingly curated her relationships to honor these. Honestly, if Emily represents her generation, I feel a great sense of hope for our future, which I struggle to find within my own generation and those older, to be perfectly honest with you. Remember, if you or anyone you know is struggling with pelvic pain, please, please, please seek support. Women's health physiotherapists are well placed. Sexologists or sexual counselors are also wonderful resources. So without further ado, here is my discussion with Emily.
Hey, Emily, I am so grateful for you. You have actually been a highlight of my year. So how are you feeling right now in this moment?
I'm feeling fantastic. Yeah.
Wonderful. I wanted to ask you because I'm genuinely curious, as a woman who's embarking into her 20s, so it's such an exciting, dynamic year where you get to kind of cast off the shackles of childhood and high school and study and explore and adventure and really find your place in the world. And classically, this has involved employment, study, but also travel. So for many young people in their 20s, going on a gap year or going out adventuring has been a key part of that decade and that experience, which is obviously completely off the table at the moment, given the current COVID restrictions. So I'm curious about how are you feeling about the state of the world at the moment?
I think in a way, I mean, obviously COVID has had intense consequences across the world and it's been really devastating. But in a way, I've kind of looked at it as sort of a gift in disguise. It kind of came at a good time for me in terms of reflection upon myself, but also where I wanted to be and where I was. So for me, I just used the time to reflect, meditate a lot about my past, my present and my future. And yeah, I guess it's obviously really scary to hear about the news, and especially for career-wise. I'm in the creative industry, so it's kind of unknown right now when the world's going to open back up again. But I think I've just really tried to concentrate on myself and the people around me and kind of push through that. And that's kind of kept me sane, to be honest.
What a beautiful answer. I think that the COVID restrictions have really emphasized for me and for society as a whole, just how important human connection is. And although it has imposed restrictions, it has also opened up that conversation around that concept. Do you feel as though we can connect in the same way through technology? I mean, obviously in Perth, we're lucky we can kind of continue on as normal. But when we were in lockdown, did you really feel that difference and that lack in capacity to connect at a human level? Or does your generation find connecting through technology a good substitute?
I think it's different for everybody, but again, my generation has sort of grown up with technology at the ready. So we've really known as communication through technology. I mean, as a child growing up, it was kind of, you know, lesser known, but especially in middle school, that's when technology really ramped up for myself and I guess other members of my generation. But I think that personally, I really struggled with not being able to go get a coffee and sit at the river and talk about what was going on or how we felt. So I think that was really hard. But at the same time, phone calls, FaceTime, that still filled that gap for me, I guess. But yeah, I'm definitely that type of person that prefers that in-person conversation. But yeah, I think our generation has sort of adjusted to that. So I think we were very fortunate during that time because we were able to kind of fill that void.
So you're a millennial. You're technically a Gen Z.
Yes.
Gen Z. Oh, my goodness. So defined as tech natives, I suppose, in that technology and social media have been interwoven from a young age. So as a woman who got her first mobile phone at 19 and my first smartphone in my 30s, I'm curious, because I suppose my generation, we talk about one of the good things about that lack of social media in our high school years was that when you went home from school, you left it all behind. You know, there was no capacity for further communication unless you wanted to dial up on the old landline. You left it behind. In a way, that was refreshing. You know, you could go home and escape from all that peer pressure and the crap that can come with high school interactions and come back afresh the next day. Whereas I feel like now one of the things that I kind of worry about for my children is that inability to remove yourself from that line of communication. Do you think that concern is grounded or?
Absolutely. Mm. I definitely experience the effects of constant communication through social media, especially when I was in my early teens. So, you know, the impression of peer pressure as well. So, you know, my year eight self, had my first smartphone, and so, you know, it's keeping up with the trends. So, you know, people started to get iPhones and it was like, okay, I need to get an iPhone, and people got on Instagram, so it was like, okay, I need to get on Instagram. And yeah, the popular thing was to just always constantly be in contact with people, and it was really harmful for those relationships early on in high school, because if you had a fight at school, for instance, it would continue you know, when you got home. And yeah, it definitely was, yeah, at times it was really confronting. And I think that concern is extremely valid. And, you know, I worry for my kids as well. It's going to be, I can't even imagine how technology is going to advance, you know, in those kinds of years. So yeah, I think that's a valid concern.
Yeah, because I don't know, you know, I hit high school and I was incredibly insecure and self-conscious as it was. And then to add into that pressure, and it's partly probably because of my generation, but I'm just not that interested in social media. I try to be sometimes, but I really struggle to maintain any interest in it. And so I think I would have really struggled to maintain that need to keep up, I suppose, that prevalence of presence. And another thing we talk about is, you know, we could do silly stuff, in inverted commas, and not fear that it would be posted on social media. Was that an issue? I suppose we're delving a bit into bullying to an extent, but was that a real fear or a real issue when you were in high school?
Absolutely. I mean, fortunately, I didn't experience anything to do with cyberbullying, but I had a lot of friends who did, especially in the latter years, you know, as girls especially progress through puberty, you know, they start to develop at a faster rate than boys typically do. So when we hit, you know, year 10, 11, 12 in the upper school years, you know, it was that concern of, you know, sexting and those kind of issues. And I had a friend who experienced that and, you know, coming to school and being confronted by all these boys, and it was horrible to watch. And, you know, it was really confronting for me to support her as well, because at the time I was only 16, 17, and I really didn't know how to kind of say to her, it'll be okay, because even I didn't really understand it. So I think, yeah, it was definitely a real struggle, I think, to kind of, and it was worry, you know, you would send things to people and, you know, hope that another person wouldn't find out, but, you know, if you had an argument, the friend would show the other friend, and then, you know, you'd come back to school and it would bite you in the bum. But yeah, it's it was a very strange time thinking back.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. I think it just highlights the difference in, you know, a few short decades have made technology and society just seems to be speeding up. And it's, yeah, it's interesting to think about where we go from here, I suppose, and what the future holds for my children and for your children. So, obviously we met in the clinic, and you have so graciously agreed to come and chat to me a bit about your experience and how we ended up together in the clinic. Did you want to share a little bit about your story and how we came to meet?
Yes. So It kind of started when I was 18. So I was freshly 18 and I was in my first serious relationship. So we were high school relationship and we kind of got together at the end of year 12. So end of 2018 and most of 2019, we were together. And it wasn't until the January. So we had gotten together in the November of 2018. So it wasn't until the January where I started to realize that something might be a little bit wrong. So obviously with new relationships, being young, obviously you explore each other's sexuality. And it was pretty evident to me that there was something going on inside my body. So, you know, I definitely did a lot of research, but it became a real frustration in our relationship. And the relationship then became quite toxic because he would put pressure on me to, you know, basically have sex with him. And I wasn't able to do that. And it was really hard because in my mind, all my mind was, you know, it was kind of attacking my body saying, well, what's wrong with you? You know, what are you doing? You want this, you know, why doesn't, what's going on? So it took me about 10 months to kind of even come to terms with what was happening. Meanwhile, the relationship was getting worse and worse, you know, more expectations and pressure were put on me and there was more pressure for me to find out what was going on. But I think as an 18-year-old, I was so scared of what that reality might be. I thought as a woman that, you know, I wasn't doing my duty as a woman, which is ridiculous. But back then, you know, as an 18-year-old girl, you know, I genuinely felt like, you know, I wasn't a proper woman, which is horrible. So it wasn't until probably the November, December of 2018 where I started to kind of do my own research into what was happening. And a lot of the things I read online were stories of women, particularly in America, who kind of never recovered. So I kind of, the first research I did was involving women who, yeah, never recovered from it. So that was obviously put me off even more. And I just decided to ignore it really. And again, the relationship got worse and worse until 2019, where, you know, I started to get a bit more confident with, I guess, approaching healthcare professionals. So I remember it was probably the October of 2019, where I consulted a GP at one of my local practices. And she basically told me that it was incurable and that it could lead to other health problems like infertility. So that was pretty massive. I had just turned 19 in that September. So, you know, as a young woman growing up as well, I've always wanted to be a mum. I'm very career focused as well, but that's always been my dream, is to be a mum in the future. So that was really devastating to hear. And I remember coming back to my partner at the time and, you know, crying and, you know, saying to him, I don't think this will ever change, you know, what's going to happen with us. And at the time he did support me, but, you know, it was hard for him, I suppose. And especially the pressures as a 19, 18 year old boy. There's some obviously expectations put on you as well. So there was pressure coming from both ends. And then after a while, I think in January, February, beginning of 2020, can't remember when, I went to another GP that is usually my regular one and I trusted her and she was brilliant. The first thing she sort of said was, "You're not alone," which honestly was hit me like a ton of bricks. I was so emotional, but it was so nice to hear that I wasn't the only young woman going through what I was going through. So she diagnosed me with vaginismus, I think that's how you pronounce it, and dyspareunia as well. So she immediately recommended me to Mercy Physio, and that's where Michelle and myself met, which honestly has been the greatest learning experience so far, because, you know, we'll go into a bit later, but I've learned so much. But yeah, that's kind of where I was when we first met.
Thank you so much for sharing. And as we were discussing earlier, I think the impact that a health professional can have, it can be so transformative, but it can be so devastating. And it actually breaks my heart to hear you say that you were, you know, initially told there's no cure and God, you know, that it's going to impact the rest of your life. So We've got some work to do. When I say we, I mean, you know, health professionals and women and the world in general about raising awareness around these issues and putting a halt to the shame associated with something that is so incredibly common and for which there are so many reasons, you know, there's so many reasons why women end up in this position where they're feeling a sense of disconnect with their own body. And a lot of that is society's expectations, our own expectations that we put on ourselves, but it can be incredibly difficult to find a pathway to healing. So I'm so, so happy that you have found your way there. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you found to be really effective, I suppose, and the things that you've learned on the way that if you were a young woman listening to this and going, oh my goodness, that really resonates with me, what would you suggest?
I think the first step for me was acknowledgement, acknowledging that my body is trying to protect me and that it's a protective mechanism and that my body is not against me. Because for those years, I genuinely felt like my whole body was against me and that, you know, it was horrible. But I think the first step for me was acknowledging that my body is super powerful and is trying to protect me. And so that was the first step in kind of coming back to my body, I guess. But also things like movement, so pelvic floor exercises I incorporated into my yoga routine. So I've always been an avid yogi ever since, you know, I've had some mental health issues with anxiety through high school and things like that. It always helped me. So it was really cool to incorporate that into my yoga routine. Meditation as well was really useful for me. I definitely felt like just being calm and really just allowing myself to think about things and feel things. Because for a long time, I just, yeah, didn't let myself say to myself, oh, this is horrible what I'm going through and this sucks, because it does suck. But I always allowed myself to just think, oh, well, you know, this is the end and, you know, it's horrible. But I think feeling those things are valid as well. You can't just think, oh, you know, I'm positive and this is, I'm going to recover and let's do it and let's be proactive, because those things are good as well. But also allowing yourself to feel those sad emotions isn't healthy. You know, you need to do it. And that's comes back to acknowledgement as well. So yeah, those kind of things were the main things for me. Also talking about it. And for me, writing about it, at the time I felt the relationship broke down and we broke up and, you know, it was hard for me as well to go through that. But writing, journaling was really useful for me. I felt like I was just letting everything out. So that was really good. But I think if anyone listening has that support network that they can turn to, talking to people is so important. Just saying it out loud and saying this sucks and saying that, you know, explaining what you're going through, it might help the other person as well to understand what you're going through and what these issues are, because it's super important for people to realize that. But for me, those things were pretty key. And then, yeah, later on, it's probably like the end half of my recovery, I guess, I entered a new relationship that was, and that I'm still in, and is extremely healthy. So he was really, I guess, important in that as well, because he, you know, different to my last relationship, he acknowledged that it was okay and he wanted to learn about it. And he made sure I was okay and comfortable and there was no pressure whatsoever put upon myself or him for anything. And that made the recovery very smooth for me to have that person that just said, you know what, that's okay. And I'm here for you because of that. And I understand. And that was so important for me to hear, to someone tell me, you know, in my outside life that it's okay to have these issues and, like, you know, that they would support me through it. So that was a major revelation as well, to have someone who actually acknowledged you and loved you enough to say, I accept you,
to with or without as you this. Are.
Exactly, exactly.
Which is the greatest gift we can give each other. My stomach is rumbling away. It's got a lot to say, clearly. Yeah. It's hitting me at a gut level. But, yeah, it is the greatest gift we can give each other, is accepting each other exactly as we are. And it's such a beautiful thing when we can just be ourselves and not, need to put on a facade or pretend to be someone that we're not, to try and be better or enough for someone else. So such a key piece of the puzzle, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Such a key piece of the puzzle. Such a beautiful answer, Em. I wanted to dive a little bit into the self-awareness piece. So you have described that so beautifully in that acknowledgement piece. And I think when we talk about a disconnect, actually being able to tune in and listen to your body and understand what's going on, you know, until we can feel what our physical body is manifesting, we can't make changes. Mm-hmm. So how did you kind of develop that skill? Because it is a skill, you know. Yeah. And I remember the first time I met you, you were incredibly focused on your goal, and I could see there was just this energy force behind you of, you know, I really want to get better. And that was beautiful, but it was very productivity focused, like in my head, you know, what steps do I need to take, which is how we are brought up to solve problems. Yep. You know, it's if I write a list and if I 1 + 1, I can get to 2. Whereas when it comes to things that are physically manifesting, we actually have to step away from our heads a bit and just tune into what our body is trying to tell us. Can you tell us a little bit about that process for you? Because I saw it happening. Yeah. And it was a beautiful thing where you came back to your body, as you so beautifully put.
Yeah, I think, as you said, I started off with that very productivity mindset. You know, I thought if I wrote a list and if I did these things every day and if I had this routine, that it would all be good. And, you know, I did pelvic floor exercises religiously, and I'd do that like every night and every day, and I found myself getting really frustrated because I'd think, oh, I'm doing everything that I should be doing, what's going on? And then I realized, oh, actually I'm not really aware of the sensations in my body. And I realized that during a body scan meditation, and it was a pelvic floor body scan meditation that focused on the pelvic floor muscles. And I realized in that meditation, oh my God, I've never actually sat with my body and been like, okay, what do I feel? What are the sensations I feel in my fingertips or my arms or my face? And those meditations helped me so much. And then once I started doing those more often, I found myself I could do it more in real life. Like as I was driving, I'd be like, okay, what are my hands feeling? Okay, they're gripping the steering wheel. How's my back feeling? Oh, it's a bit uncomfortable, you know, I'm sitting too upright or something. Just little things in the everyday, you know, walking to uni, okay, my legs are a bit tired because I've done a lot of walking this week, or, you know, really tuning into what was happening in my body, especially, as I said, pelvic floor muscles. So mine was very, I guess, constricted. So that was for me when I am in a stressful situation or like in a panic situation, and it links to my issues with anxiety as well. But, you know, I'd be walking to uni and I'd get feel a bit of paranoia, and I immediately thought, okay, what's my pelvic floor doing? And I'd feel it tense up and I'd be like, okay. So, you know, this is why I'm feeling like this, and this is its reaction to what's happening. So I wouldn't let myself get angry with myself. I'd just objectively say, okay, what's this part of my body feeling? And I think that really helped me in the everyday, just little moments. You know, you can do it in your car, you can do it when you're on the train, you can do it when you're walking somewhere. No one else needs to know what you're doing. It's all a conversation with yourself in your head. And you just say, and you know, if it's a pelvic floor thing, you don't have to go to that straight away. You can go to your arm that's resting on the seat or something like that first and kind of work your way down your body. But that was monumental for me to do that. And I feel like now, obviously I'm still learning, but yeah, I definitely feel like I've developed that skill of the awareness in my body, which was really exciting for me to realize.
And it really is the key, isn't it? if we have no awareness of what our body is doing, we can't possibly change things. It's like the analogy I give of the office worker who's sitting at his desk, you know, 5 days a week for 40 hours and gets tight shoulders. We can release them and we can stretch them, but if he keeps doing the same things without any awareness of his posture or habits, it will just keep coming back. And similar to, you know, any issue or anywhere where we hold tension in our body, we're all going to be wired a certain way to hold physical tension. And unless we can become aware of that, we can't possibly change that. So awareness is the key. And we can't ever expect to not be triggered again in the future. You know, we know that life happens and it's stressful and we don't know what the future holds. But if we're at least aware and can acknowledge that physical manifestation almost affectionately, that's the way I like to put it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here I go. Yeah, I'm a jaw clencher, you know. And now I'm like, oh, yep, that urge is strong. And realizing that you have a choice in that moment to do what that urge is leading you towards, or you can let it go. And we know that holding physical tension then kind of ties into just an increase in general tension. It doesn't solve the problem. So like my jaw clenching tendency, I've had to become aware, but also learn that I don't have to clench. I can breathe through it, but recognizing the urges is that first step. So yeah, it is an evolving journey of self-discovery, isn't it?
But absolutely. Yeah.
It's such a superpower to have at such a young age. Am I really, my mind is just blown that honestly, for someone so young that you have developed this self-awareness and you're just so open. And I remember we were talking about how now you have just really kind of looked at the relationships in your life and realized that some of them just had to be let go. Can you tell us a little bit about how that went down?
Yeah. So as I became more aware of where my tension was being held in my body, so in my case, obviously my pelvic floor, I started to realize how I felt after seeing people, you know, a few people from high school. I remember when I left seeing them, I would feel more tense than I did when I came to see them. So it was after a while that I thought, I have the control here and I can be in control of who I see. And I don't, if these people are making me feel really tense and really anxious, I don't need them in my life, you know? So I think, you know, it's not like I just ghosted them or kicked them out of my life, but you know, I definitely made the choices to see other people more and kind of reshuffle my relationships a bit. And obviously, like I mentioned before, I broke up with my previous partner at the beginning of 2020, and that kind of was the initial relationship end that kind of sparked my realization that there was more relationships in my life that were affecting me and making me more stressed and anxious. And having that effect on my body, that tension that was being held, which obviously is not healthy. So flashback now to October, and you know, I'm extremely happy with the relationships and connections I have now because they're people that I trust, and people that make me feel, relaxed and make me feel myself, which is the key. I think if you're gonna, people who are worth it, I think, make you feel yourself. And I think that was really important for me to do, even though it definitely hurt in the moment, letting go of that relationship. You know, you kind of grieve it, but it's better off, I guess, now looking back. My life is a lot happier and I'm a lot happier now with the people I have. So yeah.
And you talked about really opening up to, you know, the close and intimate friends that you do have and how that was quite a healing process as well, I suppose, in just going, hey, you know, has anyone else experienced this? Or have you, you know, let's talk about this. Why are we all pretending that these things don't happen?
Yeah.
You know, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So a lot of my friends that are really great and kept in my life were from uni. And I have a group of friends there, all female. And we were talking about, you know, periods and endometriosis. A lot of them, unfortunately, struggle with that, which is really unfortunate. And we were just talking about women's health, and we had this discussion about how unknown these things are and how a lot of the things that we go through aren't talked about. And I sort of opened up to them and said, hey, I had this problem. I was diagnosed with it at 18. You know, I've just come out of it. Has anyone else experienced this? And at least one of them has said at least one time in their life they've struggled with that, or, you know, they've known people who have struggled with that. And they have never known what it was. Like, no one really approached doctors or anything. And relationships had always ended. Because of, you know, the nature of it, obviously, it's to do with your sexual health and things like that. A lot of women only discover it when they get into their first relationships. And unfortunately, a lot of the time it brings an end to those relationships because of the pressure that's put on both parties, I guess. So, yeah, it was really interesting to talk to them about it and even say, hey, you know, this is a normal thing. Why aren't we talking about this? And they all agreed. They said, yeah, why aren't we talking about this? You know, like, so many people face this. Like, what's the big deal? It's kind of like the taboo about periods, you know. Years ago, it's probably like, ooh, you know, we're not going to talk about that. And now it's like a casual conversation, like, oh, are we in sync? Like, we're hanging around a lot of each other, are we in sync? So it's kind of like that conversation, you know, like, it's ridiculous how taboo these things have been made in our society.
It actually is. And I think I was raised to be quite inhibited, to be honest, and it's an ongoing journey for me to let down my guard. But having children has been such a positive step for me in that direction because, for example, a conversation I had with Oliver quite recently, he said to me, Mum, does my teacher poo? And I said, yes, darling, yep, she poos. Oh, does Nana poo? I'm like, yep, you know what, everyone poos. Oh, do they? Well, yeah, we all poo, we all, you know, we're all just animals doing our thing, and yet we like to pretend we're all sophisticated and we don't talk about these things because they're embarrassing or taboo or whatever. Mm. And it really holds us back because it makes us feel shame about things which everyone goes through.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like that common thing when you just started dating someone. And, you know, you won't fart in front of them. It's like, you know, I was just speaking to my partner Morgan about it. And, you know, we were sleeping and he's like, in your sleep, you did like this. And I was like, what? And we both just laughed about it. And he's like, what? And I'm like, oh my God, that's embarrassing. And he's like, no, it's not. He's like, I do it too. Like,
oh, I love this guy already.
He's awesome. He's so great.
I love him. Yeah. Please tell him he's amazing.
Yes.
And a man for the future.
Yes.
Speaking of the future, perfect segue. So could you tell us a bit about, you know, where you've been studying and kind of what your career pathway was? And then recently you've had a bit of a shift in what you're thinking. Yeah. And obviously the sky's the limit, but what's in store for you?
Yeah, well, I'm almost at the end of my Bachelor of Film degree. So I'm a very creative person in nature. So it's been a lot of fun making films and being creative and letting loose on that. But I guess as, you know, things have occurred in my life from my past and, you know, going through what I did go through with in terms of my sexual health, I've sort of realized how important sexual health is and how important the awareness is in both the medical field but also in general society as well, especially in younger kids, you know, teaching them earlier on that these things are things and these are the things that you can do to help move through them. So next year I'll be doing my master's in teaching, but I'll also be majoring in sexology, which I am so excited about. Yeah, I'm ridiculously excited about it. It's such an interesting course and I think it's just so important to teach kids. You know, I'll be able to teach through you know, high school, but also, you know, sexology is so many different career paths. So I'll be able to talk about it with a lot of people and do a lot of research. And yeah, I'm so excited about it.
Oh, I am so excited. If I had a big air horn now, I'd be. That's wonderful. You will be such an asset because you are not only coming from a place of passion, but you're coming from a place of experience. And I think that is such a key part of being able to relate to people as opposed to just coming from the textbooks. You know?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. So, Em, is there anything else you wanted to share before we wrap up our conversation?
I just think if anyone out there is listening who, you know, is in their 20s, you know, in their teens, or even older than that, who have gone through what I've gone through and vaginismus and all these other sexual health issues that we face as women, just remembering, obviously, this podcast is in the hope that people will feel less alone. But yeah, I just really wanted to stress that if you're going through this, you are totally not alone. There are so many women that are going through this every single day. And, you know, consulting people like women's health physiotherapists, like I did with Michelle, Mercy Physio, looking up your local practice is such a key step. And my experience has been extremely positive. And I think that, you know, if you've been through what I've been through and you've seen a GP and they've kind of turned you down and said, oh, there's no hope, there is always hope for anything. So I think, yeah, looking up, Googling where your, you know, closest women's health physiotherapy practice is, I think that's really important. But yeah, just making sure that not, you know, everyone's not alone and this is a normal thing.
Oh, Em, I couldn't have said it more perfectly. Can I vote for you for future Prime Minister? Seriously, you're amazing, you're beautiful. Oh, the sparkle in your eye and the bounce in your step that I've seen evolve since I've known you over this past 6 months or so.
Yeah.
Has just honestly lit up my world. Thank you so much for so courageously sharing your story today and all the very best with your future.
Thank you for giving me the platform.
Hey, want more Thrive in Your Life? Head over to www.michelleleone.com.au to find out more, get in touch, or hit us up on the socials, which I do check occasionally. Once again, thank you for joining the conversation. And remember, no matter what's going on in your life, you are not alone.